Welcome to episode 8 of Podshots, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about the 90s. Yeah, it's all about nostalgia in this episode. We're going to cover childhood memories, we're going to cover important events that happened in that decade, we're going to go through popular culture, important people, actors, actresses, you name it. We cover a bunch of different stuff. We also talk about things outside the 90s as usual, but we try to stay on topic as much as possible. So we hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, and you have a chance, leave us a review on one of the podcast platforms. So enjoy, and we'll see you soon. We've got two videos here, but I have my new shot glass with me, and it's a beaut. It looks like a 50 caliber shell, and it's quite huge, actually. I think this is two shots worth of shots somehow.
Oh, yeah, you got a shot glass. It literally looks like a shot, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it would be good if you could get one of these. We could just kind of like, I don't know, do the whole kind of branded thing. Maybe we can sell bullets at some point too. No, just kidding.
You
just kidding.
Bullets? Never sell bullets. That's a little forward there, buddy.
It's a little bit too ambitious. Stay within your niche.
Yeah.
Try not to kill too many people. Alcohol is not, we're not completely let off the hook with alcohol, but you know.
No, we're not. I'm turning into an alcoholic even more so now that I take shots every single week.
Yeah.
It's been a great influence.
Decided, everyone, that we're going to water it down a little bit, like literally, and drink some beer. Now, I said I was going to match you again. We failed again. And
you did what?
Yeah,
I thought we were available. This time. Come on, bro.
Match at some point soon, but it's pretty cool.
Okay, what did you get?
I bought San Miguel, the Spanish lager beer. Really nice, really, really nice.
Okay,
not as nice as the one you're about to drink, in my opinion.
Well, I got the one you told me to get.
Yep,
but it's the Thai beer, the original Thai beer.
Yeah,
how do you pronounce it?
Singa.
How do you pronounce it?
Singa. I think it's Singa. Although knowing the Thai, I've probably got that really wrong. But they have two, I think they have two beers that are like major ones in Thailand, and one of them's Cobra beer, or is that Indian?
Cobra beer?
Yeah, there's
two. What we should do? We should make use of your shot glasses and take shots of beer.
Yeah. All right, let's do it.
Okay, let me go get a shot glass.
This is like a christening. Oh, and I managed to get like a tiny little head on top of it too. Mm. See? That's cute. It is kind of weird drinking beer out of a shot glass, but we came to the conclusion that there was nothing wrong with it. Like, a shot glass doesn't mean you can't drink a less alcohol-rich drink.
While I'm opening this up, what are we talking about today? What was the topic?
Right, I just had to drink the top off that because it was about to spill. We are talking about the 90s, and I've done zero preparation.
I've done zero preparation too, so don't worry.
We're in the same boat. Neither of us have done preparation for this.
No, don't spill over. Don't spill over.
Okay. Exactly.
I've hit a new weird point in my life where I'm taking shots of beer.
Yeah.
Talking this is about like the 90s.
The beginning of a new chapter for both of us. Like, we should at least just start a new section of our lives from this point forward.
I was kind of hoping that would be when you come back in like September, but I guess that's happening right now in this really weird chapter.
Yeah, we never saw the beer in the shot glass coming, so you know, you can you can forgive us for thinking it was the other way.
All right, let's do this. I feel so stupid, but
all right then. Yeah, I can hear it in your voice. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, that's so hard. Oh my god,
burns! It burns my throat.
No, not at all. That's weak. It is good though, because I have had it a couple of times. The Singa Thai beer.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
So where? Not where. What's in this thing, though? So well, I can't read it.
Barley hops.
Probably all the basic stuff. All right.
But the thing is, for me, And I've kind of, unless I'm probably sure there's going to be a few people listening or watching this that are going to think I'm a real wuss, but I've just never really been into the really tasty beers, you know, the ones that you like, I guess IPAs are okay.
IPAs are nice, especially in Oregon. We're known for our craft beer. Mm. So you'll get all kinds of different flavors all over the scale, from bitter to slightly more acidic, fruity. They range in alcohol too, percentage, depending on like how much of the hop content is in the beer.
Yeah.
But I mean, we have some lagers and things like that. It's mostly IPAs. We're crazy up there, but they're all pretty good, to be honest with you. I wish they had more of that in Colombia. They really don't.
Maybe we should start something, man.
They do have BBC. I guess that counts.
Right. Right. And what do you mean?
Wait, you had BBC, didn't you?
I'm trying to figure out what that means. Okay, yeah, I think I know what you mean. What is the actual official meaning of that acronym?
Come on, man. You're making me look bad. You should know this. BBC. Bogota Beer Company.
Bogota Beer Company.
Yeah, it was in Carulla.
Yeah, Carulla. I love that place. So funny. If you mention BBC and I don't know what you're talking about, I'm like immediately going to think of porn straight away.
Or BBC News.
Or BBC News.
So you think of porn and I think of the news?
I think of porn, the news, and then the Bogota Beer Company.
But I think we learned a lot. We all learned a lot about you today.
Yeah, that's true. No, you learned a lot about me today. I'm pretty sure my social media feed just explains it all, explains everything about me.
Yeah, in the first 7 minutes, we did a shot of beer, and the first thing that pops into your mind is porn. So this is
awful. We've also done a few other episodes where we've kind of like touched on other similar subjects, and I've just immediately jumped straight to that conclusion.
That's okay. Okay, so should we jump to the conclusion of this episode and talk about the 90s? Or should we skedaddle around that and talk about some of the weird things?
Did IPAs actually even exist in the 90s when it came to beer? Because I think it was more of a research.
IPA is an Indian pale ale. So I assume that it was a crafted beer like it is today that was imported quite a while back from India. Actually, I'm going to look that up right now because
I had never, ever, ever heard of IPA until, recently. Probably I'm saying like a few years ago.
George Hodgson, brewer at the Bow Brewery in East London, began shipping Hodgson's India ale during the 1790s.
You can tell
The ale was a version of his pale ale, which Londoners had been drinking since the mid 1750s.
So it came from where I come from then.
So I'm wrong. It's not necessarily from India.
No, but it is India pale ale. It's just that it's like Bombay. Right. It's like Bombay Sapphire. It comes from London.
I'm not drinking that shit.
You know, I think because we colonized, right? India. I think we brought a lot of stuff back with us.
And through the East India Trading Company, it was established entity of the UK at the time under the monarchy. But what was I going to say?
Yeah, but that's way before the 90s.
The trade, they had a lot of trade coming from Africa, coming from India at the time, a lot of imported materials, including foods, ingredients, things like that. So you got a weird mix of shit. You also had a lot. We could have done dog breeding too. There was a lot of dog breeding that was done during that period of time when they had all that trade, bringing different species from one place to another.
The funny thing is, though, like I see influences in British culture, like for example, on the topic of India, I do see like there are certain things that have influenced us, especially in terms of food. Like we love Indian food here, right? But I don't see any influences from other places, and we colonized like. I say we, but what I mean is the British Empire colonized quite a hefty amount of the planet. So
For better or worse, they pretty much did.
Dude, man, this is a whole again, we could do a whole episode on the British Empire.
We could do a whole episode on any kind of part of history.
That would be fascinating, actually. I would
know well versed you are, but yeah, I don't know how well versed you are, but we could really dig in some crazy shit.
Well, we're going to give ourselves some time, and instead of not doing anything to research it, I'll do some research this time. But like I said, I lived through the 90s, so thank God for that. I have memories.
Born and raised in the 90s, motherfucker.
You were born and raised in the 90s. I was 7 years old going into the 90s, and you weren't even, you were a twinkle in your mother's eye.
Oh, shut up.
When
90s when movies were the best.
1993?
Four. 1994. You're close.
1994. Yeah, exactly. Man. 1994. What happened in 1994?
No, there's a weird cutoff date, too. You know, the whole like millennial centennial thing.
Right. It's kind of vague.
It cuts off like right on that year, like 94, 95, 96, something like that. So it's really? Like, am I like the last millennial in my generation, or am I like this weird group that no one talks about yet? But it's kind of like weirdly like on the border there. So
1981 to 1996 is a widely accepted defining range for the generation. So we have different, we've got different ways to define it, but I always thought I was a millennial too, near the cutoff point. But you know, I think it's just quite ambiguous, to be honest with you.
But yeah, I think it's all ambiguous. I mean, it all depends on what did they base that on? Did they base it off the baby boomer generation?
Preceding Generation Z.
I don't know if that really was a thing for a while until the baby boomer generation really started cranking out kids, and then they started having to classify different groups of kids by generation, because depending on what was going on in the world, that would shape their mindset and how they reacted in the economy, what they bought, what they sold, what they liked, what they disliked. You know, recessions affect people, depressions affect people. I think that's part of the reason that they have that classification.
Right.
They always bring it up in economics more than anything anyways.
Yeah. I think it's an easier way to define that like kind of range. But I'm just wondering what's going to happen. Are we going to get to like a few thousand years from now when we're like Generation A, and then it's going to be Generation Zero? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. They got the letters going already. Generation X, Y, Z, all that shit. I don't know why we didn't start with A.
Yeah. Generation Z sounds a lot cooler though than Generation A, in my opinion.
Yeah, it kind of does. Maybe that's why. Maybe there's a cool factor to it.
I think that's pretty much what happened after the boomer generation. And I don't know, like we're definitely incredibly different from those guys. And the following generations, in my opinion, are also very different from us. But I don't think... I don't actually think they're too different, you know. I think, and I'm starting to see this now, probably maybe not you, but I'm starting to, you know, look at the generation after me and wonder why they do certain things. But then I think every generation does that.
It's important. I mean, so different generational groups affect the way that people buy and sell in the economy greatly. That's why it's talked about so much in economics. Like whether you grow up like as a 90s baby, I grew up through the recession. I grew up through the dot-com boom and bust, got to watch my parents struggle, go up and down, watch friends of mine struggle, go up and down in finance, and just in living in general. So that kind of shaped my mentality, and it shaped the mentality of a lot of people that were born in the 90s in terms of, you know, how they look at money. Are they more likely to spend it? Are they more likely to save it, to invest it? You know, and if you can identify who your target market is within the broader market, like if you're targeting millennials, then you would propose an ad to them differently than if you're targeting a baby boomer.
Oh, absolutely.
And that goes same thing with platforms. Same thing with like guerrilla marketing, whether you're going for Snapchat ads, Instagram ads, Facebook ads, or doing billboards and flyers. Like, it all depends. Everyone, you hit those audiences completely differently, especially baby boomers, because they're not very in tune with technology. So you have to advertise to them differently, and they have just as much money as a millennial, in some cases more.
Would you say that there's more similarities between generation X and generation, I'm getting confused. Would you say there's more similarities between the previous generation and our generation, or the generation that follows us and ourselves?
I think one of the widest gaps, I mean, I think that I can see when I kind of look at the spectrum, is the baby boomer generation separated from the, is it Gen X next or is it millennials? I don't know. But
where generation Y and Z is the, millennials is Y and Z is the new centennial. One. The centennial.
Okay. So X, Y, Z. Okay. Yeah, there's a huge gap between the baby boomer generation and Gen X. Why? Because the baby boomers were a bunch of males that were at war in World War II. That included my my great-grandfather too. So they all went to war. They came back, and the first thing that they did is they had sex with as many women as they could. And they had sex all the time, and they were having as many kids as possible. And that's where they got the nickname baby boomers. So they had a completely different motive.
What do you think is going to happen after this quarantine, brother?
Well, that's another factor. Is this quarantine going to be so bad that it's going to cause some weird decisions that could shape generation Z-1, Z-2? I don't know what we're doing after that. Doesn't make sense. Quarantine. Do we go to A? What comes after Generation Z?
Okay, fair enough. Like, I'll also agree with you. But I don't know if technology has like just been evolved more rapidly since Generation X. I got it.
So it's Generation Alpha.
Really?
Yep. That comes after Z. So children born 2011 until 2025, roughly.
Generation Alpha. That is so strange. Why do people do this? It doesn't make any logical sense.
Nothing makes sense in science or economics.
Wow.
Ever.
That's a sweeping statement.
It doesn't. Everyone overthinks everything.
Yeah, but like, okay, just some linear progression, please. That would be nice. Anyway, okay, Generation A. Fair enough. My point was there is definitely, I guess until recently, I heard something slightly different recently, but until recently I had always assumed that, the number of transistors on a microchip would multiply, constantly, not exponentially. So, and that's a law. I think it's called Moore's law.
Mm-hmm. It's called Moore's law. Moore's law is that every year we have like this half-life on microchips where the amount of
transistors
that you can put doubles every single year, like that. But they're hitting the top of that curve where they're unable to do that. That's why there's such a huge push for quantum computing, because you're filling up a microchip with transistors that are the size of almost atoms at this point, or electrons. Right. You're making it very, very difficult to keep that process going. So either technology stalls for an extended period of time, or we have a breakthrough in something like quantum computing, which Google has effectively done, at least scratching the surface.
Yeah.
So being able to do that will be incredibly beneficial. But we're getting there. We're just not there yet. I mean, what Google's got is pretty rudimentary.
Bro, perfect timing to bring up the computers that were in the 90s. And we're talking about, remember the Pentium computers that came out?
Yeah.
I think they were later in the 90s. Like before that, you were playing on things like...
Don't forget, I grew up with AOL.
Yeah, okay. So you'll obviously like remember a lot of this, but...
Oh, I hated it.
I grew up playing computer games on like the Atari, the Amstrad, the Amiga. Oh God, these were Commodore. These were brand names that have kind of died out.
I grew up with Age of Empires and Age of Mythology on my PC.
What do you play them on though? PC?
Yeah, on PC. They still have them too. The new ones are really cool. But
I'm just saying before that, like at the beginning of the 90s, I think it was late 80s and it came into the 90s. We weren't playing on PCs necessarily. We were playing on kind of like almost the transition between, you know, the I can't believe this is coming up again, the BBC.
Yeah.
There's actually a BBC computer. And there was a transition between like those kinds of computers where they were like literally DOS powered. And then more transition towards like something that, you know, Bill Gates like would have had in every home by that time, which is like the everyday PC, the Pentiums or whatever.
So, yeah, it is pretty cool to see that transition, because I remember how big and clunky those computers were. Because my dad, in his office, I'd go play on his computer in the evenings because he didn't really know shit about computers. He just bought one because they were the shit back then.
Right.
And the connection via AOL was so god awfully slow. And then like once you connected to AOL, I mean, the only thing you really did was check your email. And, like, yeah. That long to check my email today, I think I'd lose my mind. I like being able to open up my laptop. It's already connected to the internet instantly. And I can check my email on my phone instantly when I get it. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine how much of a hassle that would be today. And I don't think I'd be able to live in the 90s, late 90s. Well, dealing with that.
We're all, I'm able to reflect, and I have been actually today, reflecting on like what life was like before all of this, you know, instant access to communications existed. And that's how I would say the new generation, the younger generation to us is like so much different from, let's say, our generation or the generation before, because they grew up with instant access to the internet and like screens everywhere. I mean, like kids that were born recently have, and I'm saying like from, you know, 2011 onwards, their brains work slightly differently. I would say they're more adept in things like user interfaces, and they've kind of learned that way.
And can you imagine though, life never once in your life not having something like an iPhone or an iPad or like growing up without that? Like it's weird.
I did when I was born in 1983. Like, so you know, I was born a decade or 11 years before you. And honestly, man, we didn't even have mobile phones at that point. Like, we were just proper analog species. Yeah, the internet existed, but it was still very much kind of enclosed kind of situations. Just still probably, I don't know, it was like maybe it was still probably a military application at that point. But
there are a lot of kids though that are maturing you know, post iPhone, like post iPod, like that never knew life without one of those kinds of things.
Exactly.
It's grown up in a complete full digital age. It's very, very interesting. I think that's going to have some good and bad influences on markets and things like that too, just because they're going to look at how, well, they're going to want to spend more online, to be honest, because they're always inundated with the internet.
Well, from a business perspective, yeah, I mean, absolutely. From a marketing perspective, it definitely changes things. But I think more on a fundamental level, it's going to change the way their neural connections are. I mean, you might know more about this than I do, but like, fuck, there's a reason why Steve Jobs and the like Bill Gates and the heads of these tech companies have decided not to give their products to their children until they reach a certain age or whatever.
And these children become susceptible and acclimated to the technology. I mean, again, if you grow up in a world where you don't know what it's like to never have an iPod or an iPhone or something like that, I mean, and then you're used to it. You're not afraid of it. You grew up with it. You're acclimated to it. So you're more susceptible to technological products. You're more susceptible to ideas of implants or augmentations and things like that, where they do really invasive things that are really questionable and rightly in some ways immoral. When we look at them today, like a lot of people, like take Neuralink with Elon, for example, if Neuralink becomes a huge ordeal that allows tech to interface with your brain, there's gonna be a lot of people that can be very skeptical about that naturally. Right. But a lot of younger people that are going to grow up seeing that, that grew up with, you know, this kind of technology surrounding them all the time, like interfacing with it every single day, constantly on an iPad or an iPhone or glued to a computer. I mean, technology is just going to be like a piece of technology to them. They're not going to have that same innate fear that, you know, past generations do have. And that's why you see a lot of past generations fail to adapt to new technology. It's a lot of it's fear-based, never knowing what it's like to grow up with something other than what you have.
Well, I would say maybe not growing up, but just adopting it in general, because in the developmental stages of your life, which are like from 1 to 4, your brain needs to have certain inputs so that it can develop properly. And if you cut those inputs off, or if you manipulate them too much, I think that's really why maybe they're, you know, they weren't letting their kids play around with this stuff, because they knew how damaging they could be. Like we have it on record that people working at these companies are just admitting they've built these platforms to be as addictive as possible, because they need them to be so that they can, you know, obviously monetize and make money out of them. I'm talking about platforms like Facebook, not necessarily the hardware, but the software that runs on them.
Well, clearly you don't want a boring product.
No, of course not. But I'm like, as a purely non, like market related slash buying, behavioral related topic, I'm just talking about humans in general. And okay, so this is good to tie it back to the 90s, because in the 90s, I think there was an explosion of computing power and adoption of obviously like the technology, right? Which is what you were just saying. So a lot of people started to use computers for the first time in the 90s. And then, you know, Bill Gates reached his mission for Microsoft, which was to have a computer in every home, for everyone in every home, or something like that. And that's a huge growth in the adoption of a technology. The same thing, if not even more intensely, has happened with mobile phones. So there's like, I think there's like what, 1 point something phones to the person now, like in some countries too, because of the poor network that they use.
Well, there's a lot of countries that run completely off of Wi-Fi, that operate completely off of their phones. And Brazil was like that. I remember when I went down to Brazil, everyone was using their phone for everything. Most people didn't have a computer. They didn't use data either for the most part. They would buy a cell phone outright or pay it off. So it's unlocked. They'd get a SIM card if they traveled. Other than that, they would just use Wi-Fi, whether it was at home or a local cafe or a meeting place, something like that. They just have a different take on reality. Obviously, in more developed first world countries like the US or the UK, you have access to pretty much anything you want. So, I mean, you don't necessarily need to live like that. But other countries like Brazil, for example, have adapted really well to that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Especially the whole mobile lifestyle. And everything's getting smaller too. Like I'm using my computer less and less for things. Like there's all kinds of different ways to start doing things on my phone where I don't need a computer anymore, especially the dictation. Like I used to take notes on my computer, but now I just do it on my phone because the dictation is so good.
Yeah.
Whether it's Siri or Google, I mean, they get it right almost all the time now.
So good now. It's like leaped in that last couple of years just so much. And yeah, you're right. It almost gets it right almost all the time. But like, fuck, I remember when I was at school and in our classrooms, we would have like maybe... we wouldn't have great computers. Like it took a long time for the educational, or, you know, like schools in general to catch up with, you know, computers that were in everyone's home. I don't know if it was the same with you, but like you would go to the library and it would be like some kind of shitty old computer. It was kind of like bound up. And so in terms of like institutionally, unlike now, I would say probably institutions have the best, some of the best computers you can get compared to people on average at home.
My dad was telling me a story when he was in college. They had a computer.
Right.
And it was this big, huge device all in one room that, you know, you could go to and you could study the computer and put in calculations and the computer would give you answers and everyone's like, ooh, ah. My dad just doesn't get it today. Like he's so like out of the loop when it comes to technology, but I mean, that's the era he grew up in where he went to college and the big thing to do at college was go check out the computer. They had the computer.
Hey, look, it guessed what the math question was. 3 + 3. It said 6. Oh my God.
That's nothing today.
Exactly. And you can't expect them though to adapt to the way we do things, which is why I'm kind of like letting myself off for kind of raising my eyebrows sometimes to, you know, what the younger generation, what their trends are and what they're doing. And with like, I'm kind of like, I'm trying to keep up with them, but it is difficult sometimes to try and get my head around it. But, I'm still young. Like I'm still pretty young, like compared to the average.
What are you now? 35?
I'm 37, man.
37. I like 35 better. Let's go back a couple of years.
Yeah, cheeky. No, I mean, like, actually, I think the most important thing is if you don't want to age, then don't like get too serious about your age and you'll be fine. Like, I don't feel like I'm 37. I feel like I'm honestly, I feel like I'm more your age, you know?
That's affected by generations too, like beauty standards, longevity standards. I mean, we probably should talk about this in the last episode, but you know, if you're in a baby boomer generation or Generation X, I mean, you're doing everything possible to extend your lifespan or to look younger. Like you're insanely obsessed with it. If you're Generation Y, Generation Z, you're a little less bothered by it. Access to the best stuff anyways. And
I would disagree with you. And the reason why I would disagree with you is because I feel like everyone is so much more superficial now, even myself, like than previous generations, because they didn't have Instagram where fucking Kylie Jenner is just like, you know, even as fake as she is, because we all know she's had stuff done to her and the whole family. Like we didn't have those platforms that were constantly spewing out all this content to try and, you know, get us to buy lipstick.
Yeah, but there's the difference between the real world, which we're talking about, and then the digital world. Like when you're online, there's a huge demand and wants to look good on social media or to look good online, whatever platform it is, to be impressive, even if it's just your profile, you know, just making your profile stand out. Like there's so much aesthetic that is, I don't know, amplified in the last couple of generations by this kind of stuff. But that's like your digital presence. That's who you want all those people that don't know who you are to think about you, what you want them to think about you. But I mean, once you put down your phone and you walk outside, I mean, how many of those people really care? They're not the same person online. They're not getting a breast aug done in person. They're not.
I think they are, though. That's the problem. Like, that's what I think the issue is.
I think when they get older, but I mean, I don't see the same demand. I think the people that are older in some of these older generations, they focus on their physical beauty and they don't care about an online presence, which is what I'm getting at. And I think, Gen Y, maybe Gen X too, Gen Y, Gen Z, you know, they're more concerned about their online presence than they are their physical presence. And this goes beyond beauty. You're far more concerned about your character in a video game and how much blah, blah you have and what your stats are and things like that. But I mean, in real life, you're sitting in a lawn chair eating Cheetos and feeling depressed. So I don't think there's a parallel there. I think that's, in my opinion, I think it's accurate. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just think your digital presence is so much more important these days if you're younger versus if you're older. Your physical appearance is probably far more important.
All right, I'll give you that one. I think maybe as you get older, you definitely start thinking more to a certain degree, to a certain age. So I think there's like maybe probably a, and I'm just trying to think of how I've observed people who are older than me act. And I feel like, yeah, there will be a period of time when, you know, I think from when you start to lose your looks, which is probably what I'm going through now.
No, come on, you're fine.
Yeah. Thanks. Up to probably like the point where you know you're not going to get them back. Like you really have accepted that you're not going to get them back. And I think that's when you just don't care anymore. So it's probably that kind of like, third quarter life crisis where maybe you're just Tom Cruise in it and you're like, you know, you're doing everything you can. He's a bad example because he doesn't look like he's had any cosmetic surgery done, but I think he just takes really good care.
Tom Cruise has been going in a midlife crisis since he was born. I mean, look at the thing he does. That's the things he's been doing his whole career is something you do in a midlife crisis.
Yeah, like speaking of the 90s, he was a huge 90s star, but would you say he's more of a star now than he was?
Was Top Gun in the 90s?
Top Gun was actually in the 80s, and it was
let's pretend it's in the 90s because I like that movie.
Yeah, but then he did things like Interview with a Vampire. He did movies like, actually, I'm drawing a blank right now. Who were the other big stars of the 90s, though, that you remember?
Tom Hanks was huge.
Oh God.
I think he did both Forrest Gump and Castaway in the 90s, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Titanic.
Yeah, there was Titanic too. Look, I got some of them here. Do you know any of these names?
Let's see.
Cameron Bure.
Nope.
Mark Paul Gosselaar. Oh yeah, I remember that dude. He was from Saved by the Bell. Mark Paul Gosselaar. You remember that show?
Oh, yeah, I do. Okay.
I used to watch that all the time.
That's old. Oh,
Alicia
man.
Alicia Silverstone. She was in Clueless.
What? Just look up other movies from the 90s. I'm curious.
All right, movies from the
90s. I know there's a lot of good ones that came out.
Yeah, there was tons.
In that time period.
What's your favorite movie? I think my favorite movie from the 90s, and I've got some on my screen right now. Believe it or not, The Matrix came out in 1999. So it's just made it.
Yeah. It might be The Matrix. It's hard to beat.
It's really, really hard to beat. But then there's also Jurassic Park, which was also fucking amazing.
Nah, I like Jurassic Park, but. Nah, it doesn't count.
So here they are. Pulp Fiction, Titanic, The Matrix, Silence of the Lambs, Jurassic Park, Clueless, Goodfellas, Toy Story came out in 1995, Forrest Gump, 1994. That was bloody great. The Big Lebowski. I was too young to even understand that movie.
Those are some incredible movies, though.
Yeah.
Silence of the Lambs is a classic.
Home Alone. Oh, God.
Toy Story, Home Alone.
Toy Story, Home Alone. Fight Club came out in 1999.
Yeah, think about it. Tom Hanks had a hell of a time in the 90s.
He did, man.
Castaway, Forrest Gump. Jeez. Yeah. I think his career might have actually taken off in the 90s now that I think about it.
Yeah. There were. I think there were loads of 90s stars that just had an amazing decade. Terminator 2 Judgment Day came out 1991.
they've ruined that series. I hate the new movies so much.
Fuck. Just reminded me, I had a nightmare the other night, and I think
I'd love to hear it.
Part of it was me pitching a new Terminator movie. Why was I doing that?
Why would you be doing that, Clement?
In a nightmare. It was that bad.
How's that a nightmare, though? Were you pitching like your own demise or something? Like,
no, maybe it's because this franchise is so fucked that I just knew it wasn't going to work, which is why it was a nightmare. but yeah,
I have the weirdest nightmares. They don't happen very often, but it's always like my computer breaks or something like that.
Jesus. And it's just like end of the world.
I know my computer stops working. Like a couple weeks ago, I spilled beer on my computer and now my shift key doesn't really work. Oh, so I think that's part of the reason why. And then like, I don't know, a week ago or a few days ago, I had I guess you can call it a nightmare. My computer was busted. Like my entire keyboard came off my computer and I was so mad. And I woke up, my computer was fine and I was so relieved.
Which model of MacBook do you have? Because that happens to MacBooks a lot.
Pro. Yeah. Well, I have the Pro. I think it's the 17 edition.
Right. Yeah.
No,
don't 17. Worry, man. You're not alone. It's happening a lot. So, but
yeah. You want to
get a shot of beer? Might as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm not going to get
not drunk. Like it's really going to do anything, but I opened this guy anyway, so.
Reservoir Dogs, Lion King, 10 Things I Hate About You, shit, Trainspotting, The Sixth Sense,
Scream. Sixth Sense?
Yeah, The Sixth Sense. One too. Good Will Hunting, Saving Private Ryan.
Wow. Well, that's a Tom Hanks movie, right?
It is. That was my favorite Tom Hanks movie, not because I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was fucking depressing to watch, but it was a epic film, epic. And it made me realize like how, for the first time, how much people have given to make sure that we're not, you know, one.
Yeah. That was a hard movie to watch. Some of those war movies are tough.
Yeah. That one.
I would not be happy to live through a time like that.
That's what I keep telling people right now when they're, and I do get depressed and I do complain about this a little bit more recently than I have before. But I do make a comparison of the fact that we didn't have to go to foreign lands and fucking die in trenches to get through this. So,
thank God. Yeah. Imagine if you told people they had to do that today. I don't think anyone's built to do that today. Honestly, I think people would freak out and just no one would want to go and no one would sign up. No one would show up.
Period. Yeah. I mean, it's not even like, cause women are in the military, right? And that's great, but it's not even about, you know,
No, but it's like the rest of the population that will never know what it's like to be in the military, period, will never have to go through something that's rigorous like that. You know, complacent because they have a comfortable lifestyle. They would not adapt well to that kind of a situation.
So one of the ways of looking at it is that we've lost a lot of our masculinity, which is why I made the point to make sure that I'm not talking, you know, like just about men. But men are definitely not as quote unquote manly today because we've grown up in quite a comfortable bubble, and I'm as much at in this group of people I'm talking about as anyone else. And it's true, like, fuck, we just, you know, we don't have that kind of experience.
I think there would be like some select hotspots for recruiting. I don't think a draft would work because you'd get a lot of people that just not ready. You'd be better off just going down to Muscle Beach in California and just recruiting all the bodybuilders.
Do you think that's...
I don't think they would be doing that. You could just recruit Texas. Texas could probably fight a whole war for us.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Or Irish people. Yeah.
And they are a warfaring people for sure.
Yeah, but I'm glad though, because it's better this way, man. I mean, who wants to be fighting wars all the time? And I know that we've been waging a lot of wars, but no one has ever really had to go through with that.
Well, we don't have to fight these wars anymore. I mean, in a good yet terrible way, we've learned from, you know, World War I, World War II, trench warfare was awful. Guerrilla warfare was awful. So now we have this thing called proxy wars because we agree that we don't want to send our citizens to war. So we recruit a smaller country to fight the war for us. We literally have pawns out in the Middle East fighting each other like a little chess game. And then whoever wins, it's no big deal.
I think it's worse that way, to be fair. Like, I just think
it does, but people are still dying. Like, it's a terrible way to go about it.
Keep doing that.
I'm surprised that they allow that to happen, period.
Oh, well, I'm surprised that there's lobbying in politics, but, you know, anyway, it happens.
I'm surprised that there's even politics at this point.
What kind of music were you listening to when you... at the end of the 90s, because I'm assuming...
Well, at the end of the 90s, I was six. But
what kind of music and things were you interested in? What was your favorite beer? No, I mean, okay, fair enough. I guess you listened to stuff in the 2000s.
My mom would play a lot of Eminem and a lot of Michael Jackson in the car. I believe Eminem's first album was like 99.
Right.
And then his big one was 2001, I think. So I was like 6, 7, 8 or something when I really started listening to music, I guess. But I know Michael Jackson was being played a lot. AC/DC. Yeah. Yeah. Some really old shit. Not like 90s stuff, but older. I don't know what happened in the 90s in terms of music.
I think those are the ones you remember the most, though. The decade before, when you're growing up as a young like boy or whatever, young child, because your parents will obviously have their nostalgic hits. And so I grew up.
Oh, 1998, Britney Spears.
Yeah. Was that 98?
Baby One More Time. Yeah, it's 98.
I thought it was earlier than that.
At Whitney Houston, Guns N' Roses, Nirvana. So there was some good stuff in the 90s. Backstreet Boys. Take that back. Backstreet Boys. Let's see. A lot of Backstreet Boys.
I don't know. I mean, like, Oasis was a huge group for me. They were massive in the 90s. Did you ever listen to any of their music? Oasis. It was a British band.
No, not really. I didn't listen to a whole lot of bands, to be honest, unless it was just thrown on the radio.
This was like band city. I mean, after a certain year, I can't remember when, bands are not long. They're not a thing anymore, right? Like, we just don't see boy bands anymore, really. But
yeah, I guess the Jonas Brothers kind of count, right?
They kind of count, yeah, definitely. But
don't Migos kind of count as a boy band?
I would say in Korea, they're a thing. But anywhere else, not really. Not that I know of. But yeah, in Korea, they're a big thing. But in the 90s, man, it was like so much money that they were getting from these boy bands. So they would have like the Backstreet Boys. I think the first ones were probably in the 80s, and that was like...
Well, groups were huge around that time. Like if you could get in a group, you'd be far more successful than if you had a solo.
Yeah, like boy bands, girl bands. Fuck.
Nowadays, there's so many resources at your disposal that, you know, being a solo artist is a lot easier. Than it used to be in the past. Like being in a part of a band was like your outlet.
Did you drink a shot already?
I did. I can pour another one. It's not going to really hurt.
Yeah, we can drink more in this episode. It's more fun.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm shooting beer and not tequila today.
Yeah, you know, it gets a bit too much. It does catch up on you, especially if you're drinking throughout the week too.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. We are doing that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do my own drinking and then I do drinking on here and then.
Right. Professional and personal.
Your professional and personal drinking mixed. I don't know how I would separate that on expenses when I report to the IRS. It's going
to
be weird.
I had to explain to my parents today what I actually do on this podcast. And they were like, they still didn't get it. And then they still didn't understand why I had to drink. And I don't really know why we picked that, but it's good. It's a good idea. And I think it's working. But yeah, like it was so funny because I caught myself trying to explain it to them and I realizing how fruitless it was. And I kind of laughed, you know, because they just, it's just so alien to them. They just don't understand. And I suppose that's what I was.
Yeah. I purposely was not telling my parents that I was doing this podcast because I don't know what their reaction would be to me just drinking and then rambling on for a while.
So when you finally kick the bucket from liver cirrhosis and they find your backlog of Podshots episodes, they'll be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting movie. But yeah, my parents like texted me like a week ago and they're like, hey, we saw that you did a new podcast. I'm like, shit.
No way. Did they?
Yeah. They're like, hey, we saw you have a new podcast. I'm like, fuck.
And then, yeah, they're like, we wish you all the best. And then they don't even bother listening to it.
Yeah. No, they're like, oh, they liked it. And I was like, cool. I enjoy doing the podcast most because we have some cool conversations about all kinds of stuff, but it's the drinking part that I feel like will rub some people the wrong way. But I find it funny and hilarious. Anytime someone asks me, I'm like, I have two podcasts. I have one that's like super, super serious. And then I have one I do with my friend and we drink and talk about shit.
Right.
And everyone wants to listen to this one.
Yeah, I had a conversation with someone about that maybe like a month ago, and they were like, you should niche, you should do something that like explicit about like this. And I was like, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but we don't really, that's not our approach. Like, we just want to talk about anything that we find interesting and just get to drink at the same time. It's kind of like going out to a bar, but just recording it. So I think it's good. I don't think we're going to catch everyone with this, but
yeah, that's what we should do at some point. Is we should just do this at a bar and then record it for the backdrop and everything and the scenery. Oh, fuck, just go live. That'd be fun.
If we do one day get to have that office that we keep talking about.
Well, I mean, I'll let you know on Monday. She's quoting me a hell of a deal and I get another 25% off if I do book something in May. And I was looking at the prices and it's like $500 a month a piece to retain something for like a year, which is crazy.
25% off. So that would be $750 a month for the whole
thing. No. Because after tax, well, tax included is like 18%, but you subtract 18 from the 25%, you have another 7% off their normal amount. So you're looking at about $500 a month each for an entire year for a 3-person office.
Oh, that's pretty good. What's the deposit like though?
I haven't talked to them about deposit yet. I was going to wait to do that in person because when you do stuff over email, sometimes they just brush it off. But you know, sometimes when you're in person, you can kind of wiggle your way into
a different conversation. That's a really good deal, man. It sounds like a plan. Like I'm pretty confident now, and I can say this because I recently watched a bunch of interviews with a Swedish health expert. And, right? I think you know where I'm going with this. So they have not done a lockdown and they have kept their hospitals from getting overwhelmed. And they are basically saying the rest of the world needs to very carefully think about what it wants to do because, you know, like 2% of people who get infected are having any kind of serious symptoms. And even then, a fraction of them are needing to go to hospital. And even then, an even smaller fraction of them probably are dying. So, yeah, I'm starting to think now, like, maybe I've been really wrong about how I've thought about this whole thing. And the lockdowns weren't entirely necessary. So, and I think it's clear they weren't, because if you look at Sweden, they clearly weren't necessary. If one country is able to do it, the rest of the country should be able to do it, probably. So yeah, I think air travel is going to resume relatively soon.
I think it will, but I think it's going to be very selective by country. Like, I think you're going to have a hard time flying between a lot of European countries for the time being, because
I think you're wrong. I just heard that. I'm sorry. No. Listen. My father just booked flight to Spain. Well, he has properties in Spain, and he wants to go and see them. And he booked, and he said they have not told him to do anything. They're totally fine with him coming in. It's really weird. It's so odd. I was like, are you serious? They don't have any extra requirements for quarantine? He's like, nope.
And you don't think that's going to cause a huge problem?
I know. That's what I was saying. I was like, how can they possibly be going through a serious lockdown? And now they're just, but apparently in Europe,
it's also political too. So I feel like there's a lot of, fuck it. You're from Europe. You can come in as long as you're quarantining, you're going to be okay. But like, yeah, that's it. I think they just have to quarantine for a while, which he will at his home.
Yeah. I think it's going to last a lot longer than people imagine. You can't bank on a single vaccine curing this kind of stuff. It's a virus. Viruses mutate. There's different strains of COVID on different continents already. It's not something that's just going to be solved tomorrow because someone's just going to get it and hop on a plane and go to that country with the vaccine. Then all of a sudden you have a new outbreak. You need a new vaccine. So there's probably going to be a lot of restrictions on international travel to certain places. They'll probably just cut down on the flights, honestly, and they'll probably do a ton of screening. And if they see that people are traveling with it, then they'll probably lock it down again. The quarantines, though, locally, domestically, those will probably be lifted relatively soon for a lot of countries that are doing well.
Yeah.
But the international travels really would spike this problem. So I don't really see that coming back for a little while. I at least know that in Colombia, they have the international travel stopped until the end of May. But I'm assuming that that's going to go quite a while longer, depending on how bad the U.S. is, depending on how bad Brazil is, because Brazil is getting really bad. Peru, Chile, Argentina, some European countries, Asian countries that are flying in and out of Colombia, especially Spain, which is how we got coronavirus. Thank you, Spain. So I don't know. I don't think that the international flights are going to come back as quickly as we think. It's not a huge problem because I like being here, but it's not good for a lot of other things, though.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you're right. It's not going to resume anytime soon. But as soon as it does resume and I'm able to move to, let's say, Medellin, for example, then I'm probably going to do that because I don't see the point in not anymore.
Well, well, I'm going to make you come anyway, so you better come to Medellin. You better show up.
Hazing.
Hazing you.
Oh, man. That's another thing is like that show Archer is so funny. I don't know if you've watched some of
it. I've seen some of it.
I get it's all these good phrases from phrasing. I get the, that's what she said. I get the, all of those came from Archer for me. And I love it when a show does that. Speaking of shows, in the 90s, I think, and I might be wrong, but I think Friends started like super early 90s, like 1990.
I think you're right. Yeah, my mom loves Friends.
That's, no, 1994. Oh my God.
I've seen a few episodes. I've never watched all of it though. So I don't really know much about Friends.
Same year it started.
And I know, it's terrible. You'd think I'd watch the whole thing. They have it on Netflix too.
Yeah, there you go. But it's regularly referred to as the most popular show of all time, which I wouldn't,
probably
argue with it. It probably is. I mean, there's longer lasting shows, like even like, for example, The Simpsons, but I don't think anything has ever gotten as much like attention as Friends. And that's an amazing show. That kind
of it was incredibly popular. That's why they brought it back too.
Right. Yeah. For a final send off. I guess everyone has to do that when they're, nostalgia is a powerful thing, man. People want what they want.
Yeah. Let's come up with one more topic to discuss and we'll wrap it up early today on the hour instead of going for 2 hours. Cause I don't have enough alcohol in my system to go for 2 hours.
There you go, friends. Thank God we're doing pod shots. Yeah, let's see. So we went through music, we went through actors, went through movies, went through TV shows, technology to a certain degree. I don't know, like what really stands out to you from the 90s is like being the defining thing of that decade?
I honestly think it has to do with the internet because we had it was a huge turning point. Everything changed when we had the internet.
It's true.
Life without the internet is completely different. I think a lot of us would go crazy without it. I would lose my mind if I lost my phone, to be honest with you. I operate off my phone and use it for just about everything, not just contacting people, but, you know, advertising, marketing, pushing stuff on social media, connecting for podcasts and conferences and speaking gigs and things like that, and booking flights, managing my finances. I do it all from my phone. If I didn't have that, I would lose my mind.
I'm relieved, actually, that I just don't sit down in front of a TV. I sit down in front of a laptop. Jesus, it's not that much different. But listen to me, right? I feel relieved. I don't have to sit down in front of a TV and watch commercials every 5 minutes or 10 minutes in a show or a movie. That was kind of really, we only did it because it was the only thing we could do. I mean, we could have done other stuff, but as a family after dinner, you know, we would do that. We would sit in the living room and we wouldn't talk. People listening to this might be thinking, well, that's nice. He's spending time with your family. I mean, we didn't talk. We just watched this box. So at least now I get to really pick. Like I go to Netflix and I just pick something and I watch it and it's done. And then I move on. That's much
family time for my family is like, we all eat dinner, get a glass of wine. Then everyone's on their phone the rest of the night.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So it doesn't change that much over time, but at least the convenience and the options and the choice, I suppose, changes dramatically. The funny story I was going to tell you. Sorry, man.
Let's hear it.
When internet started to really take off, can you remember those 56K? There was even 23 point something K modems that first came out, or 18. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it got to like this golden era of modems, and it was 56 kilobytes per second. And, you know, like pages would take, they would load, but they would load line by line. So it was like you could see this graphics kind of loading in from top to bottom. And that was around about the same time that I discovered porn. So I was like, loading up at home, you know, in the family home, it was like a computer in the study. And I was in the study and I was like loading up this page and I was sweating because I was hoping, you know, my dad wasn't going to come in the room and like, you know, see what I'm loading on the screen. And so I was like, come on, load up, man. And it was like, it was so funny looking back on it now, man. That was hilarious.
Hey, don't be ashamed. Porn built most of the internet in the early days anyways. So
yeah, you know, that's a really good point. That is probably,
No, it's true though.
The internet is porn.
When the internet first came out, the first few years, a quarter of all internet traffic in the world was porn. That's what we prioritize as people.
Well, wait, hold on.
It's funny, but it's true.
Now, because I'm pretty sure it's similar.
No, it's definitely not. I'm sure it's very diverse nowadays.
All right. Well, I can imagine that, man. And that's a whole other episode we could talk about. Like,
you want to do an episode on porn?
On internet porn, like how it started, what happened to the first founding people? Because I know there's a huge story behind that, which is really, really fascinating. And then,
if you want to do an episode on porn, I guess we could. And there's a lot to talk about.
We'll probably get there at some point. I'm pretty sure.
We can do that for episode 10 when we get champagne.
Might as well snort coke and talk about porn.
That'd be a cool episode title, Champagne and Porn.
Champagne. Yeah. Welcome to the champagne room.